This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Asif Awan. He's the CTO of Container Security at Qualys.
Nice meeting you, Ian, and thanks for your time. Happy to be here. I have over 20 years of experience building enterprise software solutions. Primarily, I've been focusing on building security products. I've been very fortunate to have worked and built security products and solutions in the PKI space or the public infrastructure space, SSL VPN. I was part of a team that actually built the first SSL VPN solution, IPsec VPN, then also the IDP, IPS solutions. And then my first startup was in the mobile application security space, which was about not taking the sledgehammer approach of taking the entire device under management when employees are bringing their own devices or BYOD into the enterprises to access enterprise data. So basically what I believed in, and me and my founder then, was that we should just take the very fine-grained approach of controlling or allowing enterprises to control only those applications that are accessing the enterprise data. This was even before the term mobile application management was coined. And then that company was acquired by Aruba Networks, which is now part of HP Enterprises. I was there for a couple of years, came out, and I did my last startup called Layered Insight. I founded the company around end of 2015, focusing on container security. We built a very unique container security solution, and the company was acquired just over a year ago in mid of October by Qualys. And since then, I've been playing the role of CTO for container security here at Qualys.
We hear a lot about containers. It's a technology that everybody wants to get into, but a lot of people aren't really sure how they should get into it. People don't know how to distinguish sometimes a container from a virtual machine. In fact, we see a lot of mistakes and confusion between the two. Can you give us your perspective on where you think containers are going, where we should be using them, and what they are key for?
Let me start by your statement about people getting confused between VMs and containers. VMs caused a massive disruption to just the infrastructure space. And the reason I stressed on the word just is because you could take the same application that were running on a physical node on a host operating system, and you could just put it in a virtual machine and it would just run fine without having to tweak any bit of the application. But in case of containers, there are multiple differences. The reason the impact of the container is not just on the infrastructure layer, but also on the application layer, is because of the fact that A, between a VM and a container, the key difference is that containers do not include an execution environment. VMs include their own guest OS within themselves, whereas the containers don't. The other beautiful thing about the containers is that each container or an application workload that has been containerized, it carries all of its dependencies with itself. Now, this is the most significant thing which people don't talk about in the kind of detail that needs to be talked about, because the implication of that means that, okay, now the container, wherever it runs, it behaves and runs exactly the same way, which is what it gives the huge attribute of portability. But what does it mean to the underlying infrastructure? It means that now the dependency of that application workload on that underlying infrastructure is very, very minimal, which is why in the context of containers, you'd hear of the term immutable infrastructure. Because rather than the infrastructure having all these shared libraries which various different applications would require, the application is carrying all of the stuff that it needs for the rest of its journey with itself. So what does it need then? All it needs is a kernel. And that kernel doesn't have to be managed using complex patching mechanism and various different agents and stuff. It could just be ripped and replaced whenever you want to upgrade or whenever you want to patch it, if there is any vulnerability and so on. So again, going back to the point about the key difference, which is what gives containers the agility, because it does not include an execution environment within itself. So a container, relatively speaking, can come up and go down in some milliseconds versus typical VM taking over a minute to come up and half a minute to go down. That is number one. The second thing is, obviously, when you do not have that thick, fat layer of execution environment included in each container, you can pack many more containers within or on the same host or on the same execution environment compared to the VM. So based on different studies, you can run 4 to 6 times as many containers as the number of VMs on the same underlying compute. Now think about it from an enterprise point of view. Suddenly, the same infrastructure or the compute fabric that you were using either in the public cloud and in the private cloud, you can extract at least 4 to 6 times that much of returns from the same existing hardware or same existing computer infrastructure without even worrying about upgrading it.
But we come back to this issue of confusion. If we take that initial view of a container, small, lightweight, contains a microservice, scales quickly, tears down quickly, that's great. But when we sit in places like KubeCon and we sit around other container conferences, we hear people talk about a container with hundreds of gigabytes of data in it. We hear people talk about using their containers in the same way as they've used virtualization. which in many ways takes us away from that agility. It takes us away from that ability to scale and control and to get best use of our resources. Where do we find the middle line between people mistaking containers for virtualization 2.0 and containers as these lightweight, highly scalable, highly adaptable environments?
Excellent question. You must have heard, as I was explaining the difference between VMs and containers, I did not say that VMs should just go away. There is a place for VM for exactly the kinds of scenarios that you're talking about. I'll give you an example talking about functions. When people talk about functions as a service, oh, I can do all of these things with, as an example, AWS Lambda or Azure Cloud Function or Google Cloud Function, they forget the fact that there need to be something called a backend as a service as well. And the backend as a service could be running even as a monolith because it could be a legacy system. It could be running in VM instances, or just recently, if it was containerized, it could be running in a couple of containers. So again, what is the need? That should be the starting point. It should not be that, okay, there is a new shiny object. Let me just containerize for the sake of it. Having said that, in fact, just this morning, I was reading in news that Google has released a tool for seamlessly and automatically converting virtual machine workloads into containers. But the primary reason for that is that so that you can use the same management layer or the control plane, which is Kubernetes-based, obviously, in that case, Kubernetes has become the de facto standard for managing containers, to manage heterogeneous workloads. In this case, you have a container, to your point, which is really big, gigabytes worth of storage, and it just pretty much runs for months and days, or probably it's not even ephemeral at all. From that perspective, when you think about it, taking a step back, one of the other disruptions which I strongly believe in that is happening is that, going back to my earlier point about underlying infrastructure becoming immutable, now, from a management point of view, what would you focus on? Because immutable infrastructure will, by definition, make the management of the infrastructure a second thought, which means now you move up the stack and start worrying about the next layer. And in the context of containers, functions, and I just gave the example of VMs getting converted into this thick, big, fat containers, what is the de facto management layer we are talking about? It's the Kubernetes-based container as a service layer. Many people have used this term, but Kubernetes is the new Linux. That is what you need to focus on. That is what you should be thinking about. So from that perspective, people trying to take big fat VMs, converting them to containers, it does make sense from that perspective.
But as we move things down, we have to deal with security. And one of the challenges we have is, unlike a VM, which is self-contained in many cases, it's got its own operating system, we put our security into it. When we think about lightweight containers, we're running with a microkernel and multiple containers sitting on top in the cluster. Sadly, as we've learned very quickly, it's not that hard to break out of some instances of the microkernel and attack multiple containers in that environment. Where are we on that maturity journey of, first of all, introducing the security at the microkernel level to be able to isolate each container, but at the same time share that management and capability?
This is a question that we faced when we started Layered Insight around end of 2015. Those were the days people are talking about unikernels and microkernels. That particular noise and the focus seems to have died down. Because as with anything new, it's going to go through its maturity cycle. And as it is going through the maturity cycle, what does it mean in the context of software? That there will be bugs. And when you look at the pace of innovation, at the pace at which features are getting added to Kubernetes as the control plane, and the larger CNCF ecosystem, enterprises are just trying to wrap their arms around Kubernetes, and people are already talking about Istio and security pertaining to the service mesh. And it's not just Istio, there is Linkerd as well, which provides similar kinds of capabilities. So the point being that there is a lot that is happening in a very short period of time, which is good when you just look at the net innovation that is happening. If you are the hacker, you'd be licking your chops and thinking that, okay, this is a great opportunity because this thing, stuff is not mature. Not being mature not just means that the software having bugs, but because it is new, people are going to misconfigure. There are going to be vulnerabilities. People are not going to have any clue about how they are running it, which is why there have been, without taking names, there were companies who had the default username and password configured for their production-grade Kubernetes clusters, which was exposed to the internet. That is what presents the basic challenge. But the slipstreaming of applications through the CI/CD pipeline or the entire DevOps pipeline, the capabilities and the improvement in accelerating that entire lifecycle is why many of the enterprises are adopting containers. It is not for for the reason that, oh, let's extract 6x more compute horsepower from my existing infrastructure. Or let me see how I can pack as many containers as possible into the slimmest possible underlying infrastructure layer, which could be a mini kernel or so on. People are still, as I call it, double bagging the container, still running containers within the VM, but for the reasons that there are a lot of benefits and there are a lot of automation. What that means is addressing the business requirements of the customer in much, much faster way that are being achieved by adopting containers through the DevOps cycle. So now you can completely automate the creation of the containers, the scanning of those containers for vulnerabilities, for misconfiguration, as well as that of the infrastructure, all in the build phase, moving it past through the policy gates that you can create in the ship phase, and also when things are getting deployed, and once the containers are spun up, enforcing policies for those containerized workloads in the runtime environments as well.
I was sitting with a group of people on a panel recently, and we were talking about how do we take our applications to containers and what does it give. And one of the conclusions of the panel was actually, if we're going to take our existing applications and we're going to make them cloud native and we're going to take advantage of containers, the first thing we have to do is decompose our existing application into those small pieces of code, make each piece of code either a microservice or just put it in a container, because it gives us the ability to swap in and out quickly. And the reason why that was seen as an advantage is that when we look at most monolithic applications today, there's so much legacy code in there that is in fact the weak point, because nobody wants to take it out. Nobody knows what to remove, how to remove. Are you seeing, when you're talking to customers, people going down that line of saying, okay, we need to move application A across. We can break application A into 50, 100, 200 small pieces, but now, despite the number of pieces, we think that makes it more secure. Is that a conversation, or are we not at that state yet in the wider environment?
Actually, it depends on when a particular enterprise, regardless of the size of the enterprise, and I'm speaking of the customers who have been interacting with in this space for the past 4+ years, when they started their containerization journey and how it started and what was the trigger. Many enterprises, they are going through their first digital transformation journey. So what does it mean? Let's break it down. They are trying to take some of their business processes and they are trying to codify it and use the software to basically go ahead and automate those processes. For greenfield application, given the kind of services that public cloud service providers provide, and even in the open source community, it's very easy these days to go ahead and build a function from scratch, which is bundled and deployed in the form of containers, and some of it could also be deployed in the form of function. That's for the greenfield application. Now, the brownfield application, what I'm seeing is that given the advantages of that containers have to offer, both in the application layer in terms of bundling and having the application go through the CI/CD pipeline as part of its lifecycle and getting deployed, as well as the impact of containers on the infrastructure layer, they are starting at the so-called periphery of the application and saying, hey, this particular brownfield application that I had, it's not exactly a monolith, but it was built using the N-tiered architecture. It still has 4 or 5 components, or it was built using, or it relies on certain services and built using service-oriented architecture. But it is not broken down into much smaller microservices. So what they're doing is they're starting at the periphery, because nobody wants to impact the core, because core is what addresses your business requirement, which means it's going to impact your bottom line very, very quickly if applications and hence the services go down. So they're starting at the periphery and saying that, okay, let me take it out and then run this into these services. What are the most loosely coupled parts of these, let's call them monolith or N-tiered application, and then start chipping it away and starting at the periphery. Now, when you talk about the monolith, this is where people just take whatever was running into VM and start putting them into containers, because of the fact that these are the sensible ones who I have interacted with. They realize that, okay, if we just containerize this whole thing, we don't have to worry about managing heterogeneous workloads. It'll be just one control plane. And when I say heterogeneous workload, I'm still including functions as part of the workload, because the good thing is that Kubernetes, being the control plane, can not just manage containers, but also function as fast workloads or function as a service workload through Knative. With this, containers, which could very well have been VMs, are or could be managed by the same control plane. So that's the kind of spectrum. But at the same time, when you look at it, everyone that we talk to, be it a small or a large enterprise, they are interested in containers. And interestingly enough, some have gone straight to functions. The short answer to your question is, again, it depends on the application, or even before that, it depends on the journey that that particular enterprise is going through, whether it's digital transformation 1.0 or it's digital transformation 2.0. They already transformed most of their businesses, running those businesses as SaaS services, and now they're looking at containers as well as functions for either greenfield new applications or some of their brownfield applications. Or in certain cases, in certain enterprises, if they are just starting off from scratch, then they are taking this opportunity to just start with a very clean slate. And obviously, containers are very attractive for the reason that we have been talking about.
Let's drop down a level. Let's talk about the developer here. Historically, with developers, we've tried to give them additional things that they're responsible for and then realize that actually there's no point in this. We might as well make this invisible to them. The database, the network connection, the mobile connection. These things just are. They're just magic. They're just there for a developer. Security has never been invisible. And security, therefore, has always been a point of contention. Who's responsible? When are they responsible? Last year at KubeSec, I listened to Liz Rice from AquaSec and a group of other people make a really profound statement. And that is, if we want security in containers to really work for the developer, particularly in DevOps, it has to be invisible. We have to not just shift left, we have to shift so far left that it's there, but nobody has to touch it or deal with it. How far have we come in the last year? Are we really there? Are we partly on that journey?
Let me start by saying that I totally agree with the statement that Liz made. Because the way I approach security in the digital world or building security solution is that there are a lot of parallels that you can draw from the real world. As an example, security doesn't mean anything if there is no asset. Security has to exist only if there is an asset that needs to be protected. Same thing applies in the digital world as well. In this case, I totally agree that it has to be existing seamlessly. And the best way to do that is by embedding it in your policies and procedures. Not exactly policies, because policies has the connotation of security and privacy and stuff, but it has to be whatever is the regular life cycle of and in the current CI/CD or the DevOps pipeline, which is why I personally don't believe in the term DevSecOps, because it should be DevOps where security is already there. It is already embedded in it. Whenever somebody is talking about DevOps, we haven't reached that stage, but in a moment I'm going to talk about the progress that we have made in the past couple of years in terms of moving things to the left. But the point is that when people talk about DevOps, it should be assumed, or we should get to a stage where it should be assumed that security is taken care of. It's not a second thought. It's like when you're talking about deploying an application, nobody says that, have you built the application? You just assume that, okay, there's somebody will be coding it, somebody will be building it, and it gets deployed.
But we have a significant challenge here in development. If we look around, we've talked about secure coding ever since Microsoft pulled a version of its operating system and waited 2 years to fix its own code. And as history shows, it didn't fix a lot of its own code. We still don't have secure coding practices in large numbers of companies. And I don't just mean end-user companies. Let's just look at the vendor community out there. There's a lot of people out there who need to take a long, hard look at their own code. If we can't get something like secure coding practices embedded in what has been a 15-plus year journey, how quickly can we make it so invisible that DevOps just has a secure environment?
The way I look at that problem getting addressed is that when we talk about moving things to the left, we are not quite there to the point that you're talking about, Ian. But where we are right now is that when, as a developer, I write some code and I check it in, there are solutions out there, though Qualys is not in that space. But the moment the developer checks in the code, you can check for what are the dependencies for this particular piece of code that the developer has written. Are there any vulnerabilities? You can, of course, static scanning of the source code. You can also check for best practices. You can do all of that stuff even before the developer has actually built and run the unit test, which has a couple of advantages. So this goes back to your earlier question about what are the advances that have happened in the past couple of years, more so in the context of containers. So now what you can do is, as the images are getting built in the CI pipeline, you can scan those images, which is a solution that Qualys Container Security Solution also provides. A very blatant plug here. What is the point in deploying that container even in a test environment and using the compute cycle, using the human resource cycle, if you know that that container image has vulnerabilities which will preclude precluded from getting deployed in production environment. That focus to moving things closer and closer to the developer and integrating the security tools to the developer CI pipeline or the CI pipeline triggered by developer, that has happened in the past 2 years, which I believe is significant, and it is not quite there yet to the point that you were talking about, but it is still pretty close to where we are. Just to add one more point, this is something one of my good friends recently mentioned to me, that at some point, probably it has already happened now or it's going to happen in the next couple of years, given that there is cloud computing, given that there are so much of open source stuff available, all the code that has to be written to solve the fundamental problem that would have been written. So then all you're doing is you're putting those small pieces of puzzle together to address a larger problem. So from that perspective, then the security and compliance doesn't even have to be like static code analysis. All it means is that, are you putting these things together?
The reason I'm laughing is there are two cases here. The first is, I remember object orientation. I remember those late 80s promises that we would have one or two people who would write code and everybody else would assemble it, because all the things we'd ever need code to do would have been written inside a couple of years by that few people. Here we are 30 years on, and we're a long way from getting to that. We also have the same claim made in music. We know all the notes there are in music. We know all the ways to play those notes in music. So in theory, there should never be any more original music, yet there is.
There is digital music. So digital music does create those components which you can use, because when you go from analog to digital is the one that I'm talking about, which is where we are straddling from or going from creating art versus science. Some people still like to write their code from scratch, whereas there is so much of code that is written that people like to take those blocks. So that is what I mean by when I gave the analogy of analog to digital music. Rather than creating the lowest possible granular bit of code yourself, you can always go back to writing code in assembly as well. But we take certain things for granted if those building blocks are taken care of. Because 20 years ago, in case of object-oriented, the claims that were made, your point is very valid, because then cloud computing did not exist. Then these layers of abstraction, which are various different software providers, that did not exist. But now we are talking about the abstraction having moved so far above that there are certain blocks that we just assume are going to be there for you.
But how does this impact security? Let's look at machine learning. If I'm building a machine learning system, I need to think about context. One of the ways we do context is every time we find a word, we look at everything that comes before it and after it, and we build this massively complicated set of relationships between that word and a whole bunch of other words. When we think about code, that same type of relationship, I have 1,000 components. Well, that becomes 1,000 factorial when I think about how can I assemble these components. It's a scale that we can't even begin to think about understanding all those relationships. So how do we then, in a future world of containers where everything that could be written has been written as a function or as a microservice, how do we secure such a complex set of potential interactions?
That's a very good question, and this gives me a lead to get into talking about what we have built at Qualys Runtime Container Security offering, which is the solution that we brought into Qualys through the Layered Insight acquisition. So what we have taken in the context of providing runtime security to containerized workloads, basically it's application protection mechanism that is layered in or embedded with each of the containerized workloads. A particular container having n different layers of software that comprises that image, all we do is automatically through binary instrumentation, we add n plus one layer, which provides the visibility and protection to that workload. Now, going back to the point that you mentioned, what we do is through that visibility layer, we keep track at a system call level all the behavioral aspects of that particular application. So this goes back to your point about, okay, there could be millions of different ways in which system calls could be called. But that particular application, that particular workload, in the specific configuration that it is operating under, it is performing that task in a certain way, in a certain behavioral flow, which is something that we capture and we enforce at that individual container level.
So in effect, we're bringing behavioral analytics in to look at the complexity of combinations. Why do we hear so little about that?
Because it's not that easy to do. Let me elaborate on what I mean by that. This is something that when I founded Layered Insight, I started with this belief that when people talk about false positives and false negatives in the context of security, what are they really talking about? They're talking about the efficacy of the solution. Whether there are too many false positives, too many false negatives, that means the solution is not really efficient. What does the efficacy of a security solution depend on? It depends on the context, which is something that you also mentioned, be it in the real world or in the digital world. When you talk about context, where is the best context available? Not on the host in the context of application workloads, not on the network, but it is available in the context of in the asset itself. If the best context is available in the asset, specifically pertaining to containerized workload, why would you try to gather that context by being underneath in the infrastructure layer, which in the context of immutable infrastructure will not even work because you are not allowed to change it, or using a sidecar container approach, why would you want to gather the context by being alongside when the best context is available inside the asset itself? Once you start gathering the asset, this gets to the part about it being difficult, is that that whole automatic binary instrumentation approach and being able to capture all of the system call related behavioral activity of an application workload by being within is something that is not that trivial to do. Many solutions that are out there without taking certain names, like they say, Ian, history is good, history is bad. So they come from the history of building agents. When VMs came along, it was easy to move the agent that was running on the host to put it in the VM. But now, you cannot just take the same agent which you had put in the VM and put it into the container because there is no execution environment. Then where do you put the agent? So what other vendors did was, they shoved that agent back into the host or they put that agent in the sidecar container. But in our case, we had to take a step back and had to build everything from scratch, thinking afresh that, hey, given the fact that the best context is available within the asset, we need to have that context gathering mechanism be in the asset itself. The beautiful thing about it is that once you take that approach, guess what? You are not messing or interfering with the portability of the container, which is one of the two primary reasons why enterprises are adopting containers, because it gives them the flexibility that today, after going through the digital transformation journey, and as part of that, once they have created the containerized workload, they can tomorrow move it to a public cloud, or day after tomorrow, they can move it to a completely managed container as a service offering AWS Fargate or Google Cloud Run and so on.
I think this is a conversation we could continue for hours, but sadly, we're out of time. Asif, thank you for talking with me.
Thank you so much, Ian, for having me, and would love to chat with you again sometime in the future.